So, Mayo, last week we told people to go to 9to5mac.com/join and sign up for the new 9to5mac Happy Hour Plus. And I just wanted to thank everybody who did that because we've seen a good response. And I think people are enjoying the little bonus content and we'll have more bonus content today. So, yeah, thank you to everybody who went and subscribed.
Yeah, thank you, thank you, thank you. And our bonus content from last week was about social media and TikTok. And that's incredibly newsworthy all of a sudden because didn't your government just pass a law about it to be banned or something? Something to that effect.
It passed the House and it still has to go through the Senate, which is looking a lot more likely today than it looked yesterday that it would pass the Senate. And then President Biden has said he will sign it. But it's not like a ban. It's more gives ByteDance, five or six months, I think, to sell. And if they don't, then the...
Oh, they're back on that again because they were going to sell to like Microsoft before, right?
Yeah, that was a rumor. Yeah. And Oracle was a rumor at some point, I think, which is a really weird pairing. But yeah, they're going to get
some sort of U.S. corporate ownership, I guess, is probably how it's going to end up.
And then if they don't, then I think the burden is on Apple and Google to like remove it from the App Store. So we'll see.
Then the only way you'd be able to get TikTok on the iPhone is with an alt store in the EU.
Alternate App Store, yes.
Yeah. Oh. Speaking of which.
Yeah, so all the time in the past, it's been like a month and a half that we've spent talking about the European Union, Epic Games, the Digital Markets Act. Seems like we just waste time talking about something that it all changes by the next episode, and we're here to do that again.
Yeah.
So last week we talked about Apple banned Epic Games' new developer account. It was specifically the Epic Games Sweden account that they were going to use to make a third-party app store in the European Union. Basically, it looked like Phil Schiller was mad that Tim Sweeney had tweeted some negative things about Apple, pulled the trigger and deleted their account banned their account altogether. Epic threw a fit. The European Commission said they were going to look into it. Then magically, a few days later, Epic Games says that Apple has told them and committed that they will reinstate the developer account, paving the way for Epic Games to make their own app store in the European Union.
What a debacle.
What a just... I wonder if Phil Schiller even told anybody he was doing this. He just like somebody sent him the tweet from Tim Sweeney and was like, oh, screw this guy. Just delete the account again. Or he logged in and did it himself. Like, I don't see any way this would have made it through any sort of approval process, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the kind of like Apple line that goes unspoken is that, well, Epic Games, you know, quote unquote, got approved for a developer account by just signing up on the website. And so there wasn't like a human review kind of situation, or there wasn't executive review on it before. So it wasn't a change of heart. It's just they hadn't decided. But however way you skin the cat, the legal letter that was sent to Epic Games directly quoted the tweets as being one of the reasons why they don't believe you or whatever. So it was a bad look. And I still think it was weird in the sense that they were trying to like say, well, you know, the EU is like, you can't stop an alt store from existing that sells, you know, emulators or pornography or any illicit content whatsoever. That's not your purview. You're not allowed to do that. But then suddenly they would be allowed to just block Epic altogether.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's such a weird contradiction. And sure enough, that obviously didn't happen because clearly some backdoor dealings went on, and now Apple said, yeah, you can make an Epic Games account, at least for Europe, right?
Because part of the reasoning, too, that Apple gave, or part of the justification, the initial ruling from the judge in the U.S. Epic case gave Apple permission to terminate the account in the United States. And I think Apple tried to apply that to the same situation in the European Union, and it sounds like the European Commission called up Apple's lawyers and said, no, that's not how things work. But yeah, just another development in the ongoing saga between Epic Games and Apple. Also in the European Union, Apple has changes in terms of how it's complying with the Digital Markets Act. The big change here is that Apple is giving developers basically a way to not only forego the App Store, but also forego app marketplaces entirely. So this feature called Web Distribution will let developers distribute their iOS apps directly from their website. So for example, theoretically, you could go to Spotify.com and just download the Spotify app onto your iPhone in the European Union without using the App Store or any alternative app marketplace whatsoever. The business terms here are the core technology fee of 50 euro cents still applies for each first annual install over 1 million.
per year. Yeah.
So you still get that free 1 million. And it'll still go through notarization and kind of pass Apple's security checks. And it can only be installed from a website domain that the developer has registered in App Store Connect.
And you, it's not quite as simple as just clicking a link and it starts installing. You still have the ceremony of the scare sheet screens, right? Of the 10, you've got to go to settings and approve it, then go back and go back and forth. But essentially, this cuts out the intermediary of needing to use an alternative marketplace to host the Spotify app, because the Spotify is the go-to example here. And the original rules that we spoke about at length at the time were so carefully orchestrated by Apple to prevent exactly that kind of flow of a developer can just host an app on their website and then let you download it from there. They like went out of their way to force you to quote-unquote silo by getting an app marketplace, and then the app would have to be listed on the app marketplace, so Spotify would have to convince, and Spotify wasn't previously allowed to make an app marketplace just of their own apps, right? So they'd have to find some other company to make a business arrangement with to host their app in another store, then somehow educate their customer base to install the alternative store, to then open the alternative store, to then install the Spotify app through the alternative store, and make sure they don't delete the alternative store later on down the road when users are like, well, I don't use this alternative store anymore, forgetting that they installed Spotify through it. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was so much rubbish and complexity and unnecessary stuff that was in the way of you can just download this app from outside the app store. And clearly Spotify wasn't happy about it at the time, right? And a couple of months have gone by, and now, although you can still do that, no one's going to do it because they're just going to do the web distribution thing and sell it direct.
And from like the financial perspective of a third-party developer like Spotify, if Spotify had operated their own third-party app marketplace, they would pay the 50-cent fee for every time somebody downloaded that app marketplace app itself. Then another 50 cents every time somebody downloaded the Spotify app from Spotify's own app marketplace. So this kind of gives them a way to just pay that 50 cents once if they go this route.
Yeah, because part of the previous rules, the fact that every in-store and app marketplace incurred the 50 cent fee, it forced the marketplaces to have to make money in some way, right? They couldn't just be like, you know, some nice benefactor couldn't just be like, I'll just host a store and pay the server costs and anyone can just put their apps in it. It didn't work like that because they were going to have to somehow recoup the 50 cent per users per year cost themselves, which would basically encourage them to have some sort of revenue split or commission or fee, even more devaluing the relative benefits compared to the app store, right? So now that that's out the way, just a 50 cent fee per active, like the core technology fee situation, I'm sure Spotify would prefer if it didn't have to pay anything, and they might continue to contest it. But it's at least viable for them to pay it, right? Even if they made you like they could only show you the link to install it if you've already subscribed to their premium tier. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's, because it might be harder for them to pay for free users, right? If you're in an app marketplace, your app's just always listed in the marketplace, so they could download it. You can't really stop people from downloading it. But if you can just list it on your website, you can probably like hide the link behind a login sheet, and then they only show you, there's like, well, first you've got to have Spotify Premium to actually use this thing. So there's at least a way for them to do it. And yes, they would make slightly less money by having to pay 50 cents per user per year. But I think they probably would pay it if it came down to brass tacks. They're going to fight it as much as they can, but it's not unreasonable to suggest that Apple deserves some amount of money for running the platform or something. And it's just a matter of exactly how much it should be. At least on Spotify's perspective, 50 cents per year is way better than 30% of the subscription every single month. So, you know, in a raw financial terms, they're on much better ground right now. And they can put advertising anywhere else they want for free.
And they are, but right now the thing Apple loves to say is Spotify pays Apple nothing. Spotify doesn't use in-app subscriptions. They don't pay Apple the 30%. Is Spotify going to think it's viable for them to start paying Apple 50 cents per every download?
Well, yeah, because then they can get more people on premium, I guess.
I'm just questioning whether they actually will get more people on premium this way, because what's the benefit for the user of just downloading it from the App Store versus downloading it from Spotify.com, you know? I don't see how this solves Spotify's problem of not being able to communicate with their customers directly.
Yeah, that is a point.
Spotify is like the go-to example here, but I question whether it solves the problem of any big developers, really. And some of the requirements to offer your app for download from your own website, you have to be a member of good standing in the Apple Developer Program for 2 continuous years or more, and have an app that had more than 1 million first annual installs on iOS in the EU in the prior calendar year. That second one's a pretty big, like, it's not a gotcha, but it is a pretty, it's going to significantly reduce the number of developers who are able to do this, basically.
Yeah, I couldn't list my apps on my own website. I just don't meet the criteria. So
you don't have 1 million downloads? Wow.
Yeah, I know. Unbelievable, right? Being a machine isn't that popular. But I think there's a reasonable... Like, I tweeted or, like, threaded or whatever you call it these days, that now it's basically like a free-for-all sideloading thing for the companies that will do it. And what I meant by that is it's practically true in that if you're not making 1 million downloads a year, you're probably... less interested in escaping the App Store. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't have the market power to go out on your own to do the advertising, do the branding, to run the storefront, and to do all the garbage that you've got to do. And if you're doing less than 1 million downloads, or, you know, you're probably also making less than $1 million per year, which then means you get the small developer program fees and stuff. So, like, on a practical level, I don't think anyone but big companies is really going to do this. I know on the Mac people sell stuff directly, but I'm talking about in the world of iOS. You're not going to get Apple just relent everything in one go. I think this is a huge stride towards opening up that I think has gone further than I even thought they would get through with the DMA, because the original rules they wrote in January, they obviously need some tweaking, but I thought the amount of amendments we would have would be less significant than, oh, now they're just going to let an individual app developer sell it through the website, because the original set of rules were so intent on not letting that happen. So obviously they've had a big policy shift internally to basically not fight that anymore with the EU and just say, okay, here it is. But you're right, will people do it? Like, Spotify's a good case where, aside from the, like, if you've got people on their website to sign up, they could just have a link to the App Store to download the app and just log in, which they don't pay anything for. So do they actually gain anything by letting you download it through their own site? The only thing you do get is that they could then, inside the app, promote you other stuff to buy, which they wouldn't be able to do inside the App Store without invoking the in-app purchase situation. So, like, as is, Spotify wouldn't actually gain anything. But if they're going to add more monetization options inside the application, it gives them freedoms that they wouldn't get if they're going through the App Store.
Because there, like, have
you
been
could have more upgrades to your subscription plans, you could have different tiers, you could have, you know, gifting to artists and stuff, like all these kind of, like, features where Spotify would like to take a cut, but right now they could only do that if they gave 30% to Apple for unused in a purchase. But if they sell it through the website, they don't have those limitations.
Because there have been the rumors that Spotify is preparing, like, a Spotify Hi-Fi, like, higher-end tier, more expensive tier. Maybe they're holding off on launching that because it would be hard to convert people from premium to that with the current App Store rules and the current App Store guidelines. Maybe that's a factor. I don't know. Like, that's a good point, though. Being able to upsell people is probably one of the points for Spotify to actually do this.
And this has changed, like, week on week and week. Can you... If you use web distribution, can you still be in the App Store as well?
Yes, you can be in the App Store. You just have to opt into the new business terms.
Okay. Oh, so but once you opt into the new business terms, you're paying 50 cents on stuff inside the App Store as well.
Correct, yeah.
Right.
So that's okay. That's the gotcha with the 1 million download requirement, because you get 1 million free downloads, right? And then you have to pay 50 cents for each one after that through web distribution. But you can only do web distribution once you cross 1 million downloads.
So you couldn't, like, you can only pay core technology fees and stuff downloaded through your website and carry on using the App Store as is.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why Spotify's not going to be happy. I didn't think about that before.
This is, like, I think we said when we first talked about all of these DMA changes in January, every aspect of this on Apple's part has been so carefully crafted to ensure that there's no loopholes. It's insane. You have to give them credit to a certain degree.
Oh, they're not idiots. Yeah.
And it's confusing to me why we're kind of seeing this drip of changes and not really knowing why. Like, the European Commission hasn't said anything really about Apple's compliance with the DMA. There's been a lot of complaints from Spotify and Tim Sweeney and everybody. But if Apple had... the idea of doing web distribution, do you think that they just were waiting to see if they'd have to do it? Or if they genuinely have been planning on doing it, they just didn't announce it in January?
I'm sure it's something they discussed, right? Because to do those rules that they release in January, you almost have to discuss why you're not doing web distribution, right?
Yeah, so right.
They must have at least had it like, well, I guess at one time down the road, we might need to roll this out instead if people aren't happy with it. Like, they probably brought out the January rules and they're like, we don't know if the EU is going to be convinced about this, but if they are upset and we can offer them this, we can offer them that, we can do this. And they've obviously had back channeling talks and we've landed on web distribution, which clearly Apple didn't want to do as part of iOS 17.4 because it's not shipping until quote unquote a later update. So it's not even finished yet in terms of it being available.
I think it does kind of show that Apple, I don't think they had as much back channel communication with the European Commission before the DMA went into effect as we may have thought. Because you'd think that Apple would have tried to go through a back channel and get everything they announced in January, like greenlit, given the okay and saying, yes, this puts you in compliance with the DMA. But we're seeing the opposite.
Well, I think that's part of the EU process.
Right, yeah. So it's part of the problem.
The commission was like, you interpret these rules how you think makes sense and is nice, and then we'll tell you if you're right or not. And the part, the bit that goes unsaid in we'll tell you if you're right or not is how much backlash do other companies complain to us about after you announce what you're doing? So they announced this in January, and then in February and March, they had Epic Games, Spotify, and, you know, however many other companies being like, this isn't right, this needs to change, we want to be able to sell through a website, we don't have to use a marketplace. And now here we are.
I look forward to discussing more changes with you about the DMA next week.
Yeah, because in summary, I think the only thing Spotify specifically can really complain about now is the core technology fee in terms of whether it should exist at all and how much does it cost, and maybe how arduous it is in terms of the number of scare sheets and panels and stuff. Because if you go on through the Apple website, they'll show you a full flow of what it takes to do a web distribution install.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is a bit silly in terms of, you know, like, it's like, yeah. Because when you literally have a Mac in front of you that you can do it in far less steps, you know what I mean? Like, it does feel a bit silly that Apple's like, on this platform, you've got to make sure you sign your whole soul away with a million different buttons by clicking into settings and going back out and jumping around. But I don't think it's crazy. Like, if that was the situation, I wouldn't be like fighting for Spotify's corner on that one. Do you know what I mean? Like, the financial model is still a bit up in the air, because who can say what's fair in terms of cost? You have the people like, Apple can charge whatever they want, then you have Apple can charge nothing, and clearly it's getting up somewhere in the middle of that range. And at the moment we're at the 50 cent per year fee with the installs, but the scare sheet stuff, I think it's in an okay place. Yeah, it's a bit over dramatic on Apple's part, but I don't think it's insane. And I think you can argue quite fairly that the DMA has successfully changed Apple's policies in a way that is actually, I don't want to say good, but I mean significant. Like, a lot of other laws have come out in the last couple of years, and, you know, the companies have complied with the spirit of the law, not the actual law. You know, they've just complied with the law, not the spirit of the law. With these couple round of amendments, you can't say Apple is not just complying with the, you know, that these things are redundant and you might as well ignore them. They have actually made meaningful changes to the way Apple operates in the EU. So on that metric alone, it's successful. So
I think we've moved past the, to a degree, we've moved past the malicious compliance argument. Like, I think Apple is doing enough to where it's no longer malicious compliance, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Apple's more like just begging now, like, EU, please just let us go away, you know, we've done so much for you.
But please. I think last week too, I said that like two things can be true, where the DMA can make Apple, force Apple to make these changes that need to be made, but then also the process by which we're going through all of this is kind of awful.
Yeah, and I don't agree with every single change that the DMA's forced on them. Like, some of it, yes, other bits, no. But you can't deny that it's not been effective in actually making Apple do something for real to the way the App Store operates.
Yeah. I think this process of where Apple has to announce things, then either change them, update them, add more, is really, really backwards and confusing. Yeah. For both people, because we're confused, we have trouble keeping up with all of this, and we cover Apple on a daily basis. It's just confusing. It's confusing for us developers. It'll eventually be confusing for users. Even if the ultimate outcome is good for a competition or whatever the goal is, it's confusing.
It is a bit round the houses. it's not an efficient process, but I think it has been effective.
And it'll ultimately probably pave the way for whatever ends up happening in the United States and elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. Like, all the US companies that are not Spotify, but of that similar ilk, will probably now be like, look what Apple did for the EU over here. We want this too. So they'll, you know, eventually it'll navigate through the US legal system and come out to something similar. But it might take a while.
We did have this conversation over iMessage the other day, Mayo, but under these requirements and these guidelines for what it takes to use web distribution, Epic Games can't use web distribution, right? Like, that's the...
Doesn't seem like it. They certainly aren't in a good standing.
and they certainly don't have installs. Yeah. They don't have any installs. They don't have a developer account until last week.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know. I will say Tim Sweeney has been tweeting about this, but Spotify has been quiet. So I'm wondering if Spotify might be happy. I don't know. We'll see.
Or will we come back next week and the EU's been like, Apple's now allowed Fortnite to be available through web distribution as well.
Fortnite and Spotify both now come pre-installed on every iPhone sold in the European Union.
Yeah, you know that browser choice screen? Now we've got app choice screen. I mean, Spotify does want that for music. That's not even a joke. That's one of the things they do want. But yeah. Anyway, that is the latest update on the DMA. Happy Hour this week is brought to you by Fast Growing Trees. Sign up at fastgrowingtrees.com and use promo code HAPPYHOUR to get 15% off. Did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the US with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Now, Chance, I know you have some trees from Fast Growing Trees, right?
Indeed. So I got the braided Madagascar dragon tree. It's an indoor house plant. And every year, Emily and I say that we're going to get some nice house plants and decorations, but we've never actually really done it just because it's an overwhelming process. Multiple trips to a nursery, you go to a nursery and they don't have what you want, or it's really picked over, or things are dead and just don't look good. And Fast Growing Trees kind of solved all of that for us. When we were placing the order, we noticed there are so many options, so many personalized options for kind of every style, indoor and outdoor, pretty much everything you could think of. We picked out the braided Madagascar dragon tree, clicked a few buttons, and then it just showed up. We put it in our living room next to like a little nook area that we have with like a record player next to a window and some artwork, and it really did tie the room together beautifully. It adds a nice splash of color, gives it a homey feel. But yeah, the Madagascar dragon tree is just one of the options. Tons of options on the website. Something for everybody, for every spot in your house or outside your house, and for every style.
Yep, and obviously that is a dedicated house plant, but you can also spruce up your indoors with things like lemon, avocado, olive, and fig trees. So even if you don't have a lot of yard space, Fast Growing Trees is for you. It's super easy to order online, and your plants are shipped to your door in 1 to 2 days. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show can get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code HAPPYHOUR at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code HAPPYHOUR at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, promo code HAPPYHOUR. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Thanks to Fast Growing Trees for sponsoring the show.
So we have the new M3 MacBook Air that we talked about last week. But one thing we're still waiting on are these new iPad Pro and iPad Air models. Mark Gurman said we aren't going to get a March event, and that seems kind of set in stone now that we already have the M3 MacBook Air. And now Gurman says we can expect these new iPad Pro and iPad Air models sometime towards the end of this month or in early April. So we kind of wanted to just round up some of the things that we've heard recently that have been rumored as we wait on these things to actually be announced. I think the biggest thing here is rumors about the dimensions of the iPad Pro. So the expectation is that the 12.9-inch iPad Pro will be 5 millimeters thick, down from the current 6.4 millimeters thick, and the 11-inch iPad Pro will be 5.1 millimeters thick, down from 5.9.
That is pretty thin.
That's like what? That's pretty thin. That's just over 20% thinner. I guess it's because of the switch to OLED, and the OLED screen can be thinner than the current displays, but that's dramatic. That gives me flashbacks to like the iPhone 6 bending in half.
and the iPhone 6 was thicker than that. I think the thinnest iPad was like the 5.9 millimeter 2018 iPad Pro. So that is like a whole 20% more. It'd be cool though. Like, assuming it has the rigidity and the structural stability, not to bend and break and shatter. Anything that's super thin looks really modern and flashy. And the iPad, from the front, you probably can't do very much, right? Like, no. You're already almost at the final form. Like, you can maybe make the bezel slightly thinner, but they basically, not by much. You need somewhere to put your fingers on the sides. So, for all practical speaking purposes, you look at the iPad from the front, it's what it's always going to be. You know, it's a big glass screen and they've hidden the cameras. They don't even have a notch, right? Because it's just hidden in line. You turn it over, there's probably not going to be too much on the back of an iPad ever because it's just the back of the iPad. So really the only place you've got now to experiment and change up the design is maybe the edges, right? In terms of, you know, how rounded it is, how flat it is, and also just how thin it is. So if you want a significant design generation, making it 20% thinner is one way to stand out.
Because there were the rumors that Apple was going to do like a glass back with MagSafe or something on the new iPad Pro. And I don't think we've heard anything about that for a while.
Yeah, that kind of fell away. The overall design of the 2024 iPad Pro, we believe, is basically what the 2018 one looks like, right? So they're not changing the edges too much. It's the same kind of chassis. The big feature is the screen, but a byproduct of moving to that screen is they can make the overall thing thinner. Because especially on the 12.9-inch iPad Pro, when they added Mini LED, it got a bit thicker to allow for the extra backlighting space and stuff. So this kind of reverts that and more to make for a very thin device. And look, is making an iPad a millimeter thinner changing how you use it? No, but it looks cool and it feels nice in the hand. And it makes it stand out and it looks different. So that always means something. I hate that people are like,
yeah,
you know, what's the point of making it thinner? It's like, if you make it thinner, have no negative trade-offs. You should make it thinner, right? And hopefully that's what they've done.
My question when it comes to thinness, though, is always, there obviously is going to be some trade-off. There might not be an obvious design trade-off, but what if the thickness stayed the same and battery life got 50% better, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously, they've made that decision and they think they've made the right decision, but iPad battery life is not very good, especially on the iPad Pro.
It just doesn't compare to like a MacBook Air.
Exactly. And or maybe with the OLED screens, you know, the efficiency improvements there will be enough to offset any potential battery loss by going thinner. But I don't know. We'll have to see just how good it looks. I imagine once we see it, I'll say, yeah, I'll just use this thing plugged in all the time. It looks gorgeous.
Because like the thing with the iPads is, if you're only doing light work or light use, you know, browsing the web, checking your social media, watching some videos and stuff, you can get to the 10 hours, right? Which feels fine, even though obviously the MacBook Air now goes to like 18 hours, if not more. But the Air can also get to like 14 hours, 15 hours when you're actually pushing it. You know, you're doing all your work, you've got multiple apps open, you're flicking around, you're doing video editing, like all that stuff. Like the Air can last for a very, very long time. The iPad, if you push it, the battery life falls off a cliff. It's like 3, 4, 5 hours. It's nowhere near 10. And that feels pretty punishing. Because with the iPad, you're also carrying, you know, if you are using it for work, you've probably got the keyboard case attached to it. So it's all that extra bulk that doesn't give you space for battery, right? That's the trade-off in the form factor, because the iPad's just the screen part, right? That's all the way the all technology is, all the battery is.
Right.
To match a MacBook Air battery life, practically speaking, you'd need a keyboard case that also had like additional battery capacity inside of it, which we don't think they're going to do.
One design change that we could see from the front, though, is the FaceTime front-facing camera being relocated from the top bezel to like the horizontal side bezel. This is the weird change that they made to the iPad 10 in 2022. And it's one of those things that it's very weird. It's only on the entry-level iPad. But now this year, it sounds like we've seen a rumor saying it'll come to the iPad Air. And we also saw code evidence in iPadOS 17.4 hinting that it'll also come to the iPad Pro.
It's a weird change in that it was weird they only did it for one model. It makes perfect sense in putting it in that position. Because being on the portrait side just makes your eye line look off. Because it's not where... Like, in the old days of the iPad, it was more of a portrait device. A lot of the product marketing was showing portrait. You'd hold it in portrait when you're reading a book or you're on FaceTime and stuff. But as the iPad screen got bigger and bigger, and as cases and the light became more popular, now it's a landscape device first.
And the bezels are now the same size all the way around, which is part of it too.
Yep. So it now is predominantly used in landscape, because generally you might have like two apps open and you have the sidebars and stuff. So it's definitely landscape biased, and it feels really weird that the camera is off on the left-hand side, not directly in line with you. As obviously the pandemic stuff made video chat even more prominent.
Yeah. Because you can always tell when you're on a FaceTime call or a Zoom with somebody, or you're like watching an interview and one person's like on Zoom or FaceTime, you can tell when they're using an iPad because the camera angle is just slightly off center, slightly to one side. It's kind of, this is a long time overdue, this change. It should have been done in 2018, probably.
Yeah, but the big thing for the iPad Pro is that screen, right? The quality of the OLED display. And I'm sure it will look very, very pretty, because the iPhone screen looks very, very pretty, but it's only, 6 inches, and you can take it to 12.9 inches with the upcoming iPad Pro, and it'll look even better. And there's some rumors that this will be even like a step beyond the current OLED generation. Yeah. It's going to be like the cutting edge OLED generation, where it's even thinner, it's got even higher brightness levels and contrast and, all the likes. So it sounds like they're pushing the boat out and giving you a really, really high quality display on the 2024 model. So for things like video and, content consumption, that is fantastic. Does it change the calculus of whether you should buy an iPad or not, or use an iPad for getting your work done? I don't really think so.
Especially when the rumor is it's going to be more expensive because of that excellent display.
Yeah, I mean, some of the rumors about price being a bit ridiculous, where it's like it's going to be $1,500 or something. It's like, it's not going to happen. Like Samsung have been shipping OLED tablets for a couple of years, and their pricing is not outrageous in many ways. It's cheaper than the iPad equivalent. Yeah. So it probably will get slightly more expensive, maybe like $100 more or something. I don't think it's going to go to $1,500, because Apple just wouldn't sell enough of them to make it worthwhile.
I think Digitimes have said $160 or something, which keeps the 11-inch model under $1,000, which is important, I think.
Yeah, I even think that's pushing it, but we'll see very soon. Maybe they do push it higher and they just use the iPad Air as their like stopgap there for the in-between option. It's... Like, I don't know what hardware change they could make to the iPad to make it more practical for work. I guess the only thing would be like adding a second port so you can plug something in while also charging it or something. Most of the productivity side of the iPad that feels a bit lacking right now is all software based. So it'll be very easy, and I'm sure the reviews will write this. The 2024 iPad Pro will come out, and people are like, well, why did they bother? It still can't do this, or this, and you can't get this, this, and this done. And that'll be perfectly true, but I don't think you can expect that out of the next generation hardware generation. Like, going from the non-2018 iPad Pro, the one with the bigger bezels and stuff, to the 2018, the hardware was way better, and it was way cool, and it looked way more fashionable. The bezels got thin, it was great. Did it change the productivity capability of the machine? No, not really. And I think that's probably what we'll get here with the 2024 generation as well.
The biggest change to the productivity angle of the iPad Pro was 2020, when they released the Magic Keyboard with the trackpad for the first time.
And we are supposedly getting a new generation of Magic Keyboard, right? So you'll probably get a function row, just like what the base iPad got as well.
Yeah.
And so you get some nice, dedicated media keys and the function buttons, and maybe you'll be able to like bind shortcuts to them or something with some iPadOS mini software update or something. But overall, you're not going to get too much more productivity out of the keyboard other than that it's a keyboard.
It might be better for putting it in your lap, which is one of the problems with the Magic Keyboard right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think Mark Gurman, has he said the base of it will be aluminum?
Yes. So it'll be more like a laptop in the bit around the keys will be metal.
Yeah.
But the bit, if it's closed, the outside will still be the fabric-y material, or whatever, the rubber fabric-y material.
The other thing when you look at the pricing and the value of the iPad Pro is when you factor in the cost of the iPad Pro itself and the Magic Keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the M, especially now that the M2 MacBook Air is $999. That's a tough sell. That's a very tough sell.
And you know the margins on the keyboard are insane. Like, the Magic Keyboard for the 12.9-inch iPad Pro is like $349. It's like more expensive, or the same price as the base generation iPad. You know, the base model, the whole of the base model iPad is the same price as the keyboard for the iPad Pro. Like, if they wanted to make it, if they wanted to improve the calculus for what should you buy and like make the iPad more popular for work, they could like just make the keyboard free. You know, like just ship it with the iPad or make it way, way, way cheaper. Like, how many models of iPad keyboard do they sell at the moment? Like 5 different ones, and like it's insane. Ooh. Like, just if they would relent on the margins just a bit, they could make it so much cleaner and so much more appealing by just giving you the keyboard with it, or like making it way cheaper. And you go, why would they give you the keyboard with it? It's like, on the Mac, they give you the keyboard with it. So it's always going to be disadvantaged if they keep taking those crazy margins on the accessories.
One thing, now that you mentioned like they sell like 5-6 different keyboards right now, one thing I didn't realize until a couple weeks ago is the rumor is the new redesigned Magic Keyboard will only be for the iPad Pro. The iPad Air will continue using the current Magic Keyboard.
Oof.
Did you know that? Because I missed it. I didn't
think about that. Yeah, that is.
So toss that up to the continued confusion of the iPad accessory.
That kind of suggests they're changing the mechanism and the way it connects or something slightly. So maybe the edges of the new model are a bit different.
Or it's just putting more separation between the Air and the Pro.
Because right now, you can get, for the iPad Pro models, you can either have the Magic Keyboard, or you can have the Smart Keyboard Folio. Which Correct. Is, the only appeal of it is that it's cheaper, I think.
As if you don't want the trackpad.
Yeah, if you don't want the trackpad, you can just have the Folio. So I guess it's lighter or whatever, but like, why? You know, like, this is like an Apple Pencil situation. It's like, really? Could you not just make the Magic Keyboard cheaper so that you didn't have to have the Folio as well? Apple will be Apple. At least we believe the pencil situation will be resolved, because they're going to bring out the USB-C later this year. They'll bring out the 11th generation base iPad and stop selling the 9th generation iPad, which has Lightning. So then they don't have to sell the Lightning pencil as well anymore, which is some relief. But yeah, I don't think the keyboard situation is going to get any cleaner, unfortunately. And as you just said, it might get worse.
Yeah, I think it's going to get worse. Yeah. So are you... I think you mentioned at some point you might get the new 12.9-inch iPad Air. Or what's your current thinking?
I mean, I'm kidding myself about the Air. If I'm going to get one, I'd get the Pro because I want the OLED now.
Like, that's what I was...
Yeah. It's super appealing. Like, practically speaking, the Air is all I really need. Do you know what I mean? For what I know I'm going to use it for, which is like browsing the web, watching video and scrolling social media or whatever. Because like, when I used to have the iPad, I'd like have it'd be like in the living room or whatever, and I'd like watch TV on the TV and then just use the iPad to like scroll around. And when I stopped using the iPad, you just use your phone to do that, right? But it is nicer having stuff open, and I did some occasional typing of like blog posts and stuff on it, but not enough to justify the price of the thing. But sometimes you gotta buy things because they're fun and you like them, right? And I'm sure the OLED screen will be way nicer than whatever the Air has. I don't think the Air will even get promotion this year. So it'll be another year of 60 hertz only on the Air.
So I have the 10.9-inch iPad Air. Then I have a 12.9-inch iPad Pro with the mini LED. Even that, the difference between the screens, it's like night and day. Both because of the mini LED and also promotion on an iPad is so good.
Promotion feels really good. So yeah, if I'm going to buy one, I'd probably have to get the OLED one. But maybe I could get away with just not the 12.9, I'd just get the 11-inch.
The 11-inch with OLED sounds pretty tempting, because right now the 11-inch is still on the old screen technology. It never even got mini LED.
Yeah, because I know, like, I know
12.9 inches is too big for sitting on the couch and just scrolling through social media.
It is. But when you're going on, if you're doing travel, it's kind of nice because if you're on like a plane or something, you get a bigger screen to watch in the content. Like,
I have Vision Pro for a plane, so.
That is true. That's the other question mark here, though, is like the iPad was getting squeezed for so long by the MacBook Pros and the MacBooks and the MacBook Air. Now it's also squeezed by, and squeezed on the other end by the phones. Now it's also kind of squeezed by the allure of the Vision Pro as well. Yeah. It's like, for the travel computer, the best one is probably the headset. And it's like, oh, the use case is, you know, it's hard to justify. It's hard. But I'm kind of tempted. I don't know. We'll have to see. But like, I don't need one. That's the problem. I don't need one.
Does anybody need anything? Not really.
Well, you kind of need a laptop. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of need your phone. Like, I'm kind of on the, like, but I don't think I'm going to, the Vision Pro is just way too expensive. Like, it's probably coming out to the UK soon. I know there was a code leak about, like, they're adding the UK British keyboard style soon. So, like, that's a good hint at region expansion. But that is, like, going to be $4,000.
Yeah. Like,
It's way too expensive for something that is really cool, but I don't think I'll use. I know you use yours all the time, but I just don't think I will. The iPad is more palatable when it's quote unquote only $1,000.
I think you got to do it. I think you didn't buy a phone, you didn't buy a Vision Pro, you haven't bought a new Mac since.
I know, I've been doing good this year. I'm like, coasting.
You're still on the high of that brand new Series 9 with double tap.
I double tapped just the other day. I was working and I was like double tap, making dinner, washing up, double tap. And I literally when I was making dinner and washing up, I double tap. I was like, I should tell Chance about this, but I forgot. But it's like, and actually, what's really funny, if you go on apple.com at the moment, that's what's on top of the website again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, double tap Apple Series 9 is like their massive feature on Apple.com for the last like few days. The Vision Pro has been relegated to a lower slot. Are you going to upgrade the iPad, your iPad?
I don't think so. No, I don't. If I do, I might
consolidate. Okay, clip that. We'll be ready to invalidate you shortly.
Well, I have one iPad that's a review unit from Apple, so that's, I can't do anything with that.
Yeah.
But I have an iPad mini and an iPad Air that are my personal devices. If I do anything, I might consolidate both of those just into an 11-inch iPad Pro with OLED.
Do you use them?
No, not really.
Okay.
And part of that is just because I don't like the screens. It's hard to go to using those screens after using ProMotion. I don't know. I'm still financially recovering from Vision Pro. I don't know. I think Emily also might have a problem if I buy an iPad Pro right now. So
yeah, I mean, the Vision Pro does, if you're using it and like it, it does take up much of that space that
my iPad usage was low to moderate, and now Vision Pro is here, so it's like
zero,
very very low.
Yeah.
The only time it gets used is like when I've taken my contacts out at night and I can't use Vision Pro, so I'll watch something on the iPad for like half an hour before I go to bed. That's the extent of my iPad use right now.
Well, whether I buy one or not, I'm really looking forward to the announcement because I think it'd be cool. And maybe there'll be some surprises in there too. But just having a 13-inch OLED screen, even if I only look at it in the Apple Store, I'd be like, that looks nice. So hopefully we'll see that in a couple of weeks' time. Happy Hour This Week is also brought to you by Ladder. If you're anything like me, you have a certain tendency to put things off until the very last minute. Dentist, optician appointment, filing taxes, that kind of stuff. And it's usually fine, but you shouldn't mess around and wait when it comes to life insurance. Get term coverage life insurance through Ladder today. Go to ladderlife.com/happyhour to see if you're instantly approved. You know, I started needing glasses last year, and that was a moment that hit me like, I'm getting older, and stuff like life insurance somehow feels immediately more relevant. Life insurance gives you peace of mind to know that your family will be taken care of if the worst happens. Ladder is a 100% digital service. When you apply for $3 million in coverage or less, that means no doctors, no needles, and no paperwork. It's all done online. You just need a phone or laptop to apply. You fill out Ladder's application form, and their smart algorithms will work in real time and tell you instantly if you're approved. Ladder has no hidden fees and you can cancel at any time. Get a full refund if you cancel in the first 30 days. And Ladder's policies are issued by insurers with long proven histories of paying claims. Ladder's customers rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot. So if you've been thinking about getting life insurance, Ladder is the place to do it. If you aren't sure, but you just want some more information, go on Ladder's website, fill out their online calculator, and you can see the costs and terms of the plan with no commitment. And as the cost of life insurance goes up as you age, now is the time to act and get it done. So go to ladderlife.com/happyhour today to see if you're instantly approved. That's ladderlife.com/happyhour. One more time, ladderlife.com/happyhour. Happy Hour is also brought to you by LinkedIn. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs is the tools to help you find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. As you're growing your team, it's so important to have high quality candidates to interview so you know you're ultimately hiring the best person for the job. And LinkedIn makes it so easy to find them. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. It is ubiquitous and the place you want to be for your job to be seen, with a vast network of more than a billion professionals. I know when my brother was looking for work last year, LinkedIn is the first place that he went to find a job. Who doesn't? LinkedIn gives you access to professionals that you can't find anywhere else. And the whole process is so easy and intuitive. It's quite simply the best place to hire. Hiring is easy when you have that many quality candidates available. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours when they're using LinkedIn. LinkedIn is constantly working to make their hiring platform even better. They recently just launched a feature to help you write job descriptions, which makes the process even quicker than before. So join 2.5 million small businesses that use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/happyhour. That's linkedin.com/happyhour to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring the show.
So more details about the failed Apple Car project continued to come out. I think an interesting one this week was Bloomberg's Mark Gurman said that the Apple Silicon team was heavily involved in Apple Car, which is obvious, but what he described as the AI brain of the car was basically the equivalent of four M2 Ultra chips put together. So a single M2 Ultra chip has a 24-core CPU and a GPU with up to 76 cores. An Apple Car had four of those. It's kind of like the mythical M2 Extreme chip for the Mac Pro that probably will never see the light of day. But like...
yeah, the M2 Extreme was going to be two M2 Ultras.
Right, and this is four.
Obviously, the car is huge, so it it can fit a bigger chip. But there is definitely a line of inquiries to, well, if they could make this, why didn't they make a chip for the Mac Pro?
But the car is so much bigger. The car has such a bigger battery. The car has better ways to cool that chip. The baseline for what a car does with this chip at any time is exponentially higher than what the baseline for what a Mac is doing. I'm sure there are going to be some Mac Pro fans who are like furious at this news, but I don't think it's even in the same ballpark.
I think there's a difference in interpretation. So,
okay,
with the Mac Pro, I don't think it was they couldn't make it. It didn't make sense for them to make it in terms of the commitment to silicon, the use of the fabrication resources at the factory, the price. The car was a bit different to that because it was going to cost way more money. They would have much bigger margins to support the price and to support the yield. And they didn't really have a choice because if you're going to run self-driving algorithms, you need a beefy chip locally. So they would dedicate the resources on that basis. With the Mac Pro, they made a judgment call that as of the M2 generation, we don't want to pay for the cost of running up the TSMC factories with a chip that's only going to be used in 0.1% of Macs, because we're only going to sell it in the Mac Pro that's really expensive.
Right.
Whereas the Apple Car, every single Apple Car would come with this chip. Right. And the people buying the Apple Car would be paying $100,000 a unit, or how much the car was going to be. So I think, at least if you want to take this story, at least it confirms at least that on a technical basis, Apple could make even more powerful M2 chips, right? Because if they can make one with four, they can make one with two. And one with two, yes, you probably... I'm pretty sure you could fit a two M2 Ultra design inside the Mac Pro chassis, which is ginormous for what's in there, right? And mostly empty space. So I don't think it's a question of like heat or whatever or things. And, you know, they had that design used to host Xeon chips that were like way more power hungry. It's just a matter of prioritization and the reality that not many people buy the Mac Pro, right? Which sucks for people that buy the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
And Apple has the blatant face to sell the Mac Pro as if they're giving you the best experience ever, right? Like, what are you complaining about? Here's the Mac Pro with the M2 Ultra. It's like, yeah, but the M2 Ultra is what you can get in the Mac Studio, which is a quarter of the size. All I take away from this story is that hopefully one day, as long as they keep selling the Mac Pro, which is not guaranteed, but as long as they do, maybe it's the M3, maybe it's the M4, the mythical M3 Extreme version, M4 Extreme, whatever you want to call it, may again exist. I think the decision for the M2 generation was specific to the time. As they get even better at making silicon, as the 3-nanometer requirements ease up, right, and they get better at making 3-nanometer on the iPhone, they get more capacity at TSMC, then they might have some more wiggle room to experiment and go high-end. I think it was very disappointing that the M2 Mac Pro is the same performance as the M2 Mac Studio. I hope it changes. This car report gives at least me some additional evidence to that fact that it is at least feasible.
In another report, Mark Gurman had some interesting details, I think, on just how far some of Apple's talks with other car companies actually progressed. The most interesting one, I think, is he says that Apple's talks with Mercedes-Benz made it kind of far along. And the details were basically that Mercedes would manufacture Apple's car, while Mercedes would also sell its own cars with Apple's self-driving platform and Apple's user interface. Apple bailed on this, I guess, for who knows why, the same reason they bailed on the entire project, I guess. There are also, I guess they talked with Ford at some point about Apple buying cars from Ford's Lincoln brand and selling them. A whole bunch of different weird discussions. There was a tidbit too about Apple almost buying McLaren to make Johnny Ive happy. Basically let Johnny Ive work out of McLaren's office in the United Kingdom. A whole bunch of weird stuff. This project was just firing off random things left, right, and center. Nothing seemed to have stuck.
It was an octopus with so many tendrils trying to find some route to market that they could be happy with. And ultimately, it all came back down to the autonomous feature, which they couldn't make happen. And so all of the legs got cut off, basically.
I do think it's interesting.
They
didn't.
They weren't like, it wasn't like a joke, right? Like,
no. Yeah.
You know, when you're spending $10 billion, you're taking this seriously. They explored all opportunities, arguably more. If there's one criticism of the Apple car thing, it's not that they did it, in my opinion. It's that they didn't stop doing it sooner, right? Like, because I think by 2020-ish, the attitude and the outlook on self-driving was way different than it was in 2015. And so if self-driving was so key to their strategy and what they wanted to ship, you know, they probably could have wound down Project Titan 5 years ago. Rather than, it seems like the last couple of years, they kind of were just pushing, you know, bad money after good, trying to like salvage something. And then they finally saw sense and they dropped it. So I don't berate them for doing Apple Car. I think the Apple Car idea was great, and if they could have made it, they would have. And I think for some of these ventures, you have to spend money up front, even if it's not guaranteed to work. And this was one of those cases. The critique is a bit of indecision, and so it did coast for a while before they shuttered it. It kind of seems like Kevin Lynch was the final guy to come in and try and see sense, and was like, look, guys, we aren't going to make this happen. You know, we're either going to make a car that looks like a Tesla from 4 years ago by the time we ship it in 2028, or we need to give up. And they actually made the sensible decision.
And Jeff Williams was also involved only towards the end, I think. And if you put the chief operating officer on a project that's burning $1 billion a year with nothing to show for it, he's going to be pretty keen to shut it down pretty quickly.
Yep.
So Rivian announced the R2 and the R3 and the R3X last week. And the amount of posts I've seen on Twitter and threads of people saying that Apple should buy Rivian is just insane. And it's not a bad thought at all. In terms of like culture and brand, they seem to be a pretty good fit. But if Apple was going to buy Rivian, they would have done it by now, I think.
The culture clash, like, Apple is so opposed to acquiring companies. Like, I don't think under Tim Cook's leadership, you're going to see them buy anything that big. It's just, they just don't want to do it. They just don't. Like, they just fear the culture clash, and they fear the integration, and they see what other companies do where it's dysfunctional when they buy huge things and they try to amalgamate it together, and it never gets far enough along.
Even it seems like Apple hiring a bunch of people from the car world for Apple Car didn't go very well. Just integrating people from other companies, let alone an entire company, seems like that just didn't go according to plan.
Yeah, divorced from the car, right? Anything. They seem so opposed to buying something big, even when other companies of their size or smaller would buy five things, right? That's what makes them stand apart, and that's their culture, and it's served them pretty well overall, right? Nothing, you know, yeah. Every situation is different, but overall, you can't really blame their strategy there. So they're just not going to do it. Maybe in another 10 years' time, when self-driving is maybe viable again, buying a company to get into the space and give you a kickstart is maybe a good way to go, but they just shut the whole thing down. There's no way they're going to buy a car company next year. It's just not going to happen. Like, the next chance I feel like the Apple car has it becoming a thing again is like when Tim Cook leaves and new leadership comes in, and they maybe they see sense in a car project that somebody else didn't. But until that happens, it's dead in the water.
And that could happen sooner rather than later. You never know.
True.
The only thing about Rivian that I think might make sense is if they have problems ramping up like the R2 production, they might need to sell to somebody, or at least like get an investment from somebody. And that was when the Tesla Apple rumors kind of picked up steam, is when they were struggling to make the Model 3. And you have to wonder if maybe Apple regrets not going after Tesla a little bit during those days.
I'm sure they do.
And if Tim Cook's gone, Rivian is still a beloved brand, but struggling. I don't know. I could see it.
I mean, Musk is a pile of, is a bag of problems, but Tesla, the upside was huge, right? If they had done that. So I'm sure they do regret it, but there's plenty of things they regret and there's plenty of things they don't regret. So in some ways, you have to take the rough with the smooth.
The good news is Apple's work on revolutionary new AI features continues. This time, though, for advertising, I guess.
Everyone loves ads. Woo!
Business Insider says Apple is testing an AI-powered ads platform, which basically just sounds like it is designed to kind of automatically place ads in different spots in the App Store. Is that right?
Yeah, it's to make it easier for advertisers. So rather than to be like, I'm going to place this ad on the Today tab, this ad on the Search tab, and this ad here, and I'm going to allocate this much budget to this, this much budget to that, they can just make it like a one-click process where you make your ad, you say how much money you have to spend, and then you let the AI place it where it's most effective. Google Incredible. And Meta and Facebook and everybody else have very similar things. Apple is a bit behind here, so they're ramping it up. The only weird thing is Google and Facebook, like, there's so many more surfaces where ads on those marketplaces show up. I mean, obviously Google has like the entire of Google search, right? With all the different queries and keywords and everything else, and all the websites that use AdSense, like 95 Mac. So it makes it like it becomes more of a hard thing for a human to manage, right? Because there's just so many places where you could theoretically advertise on a Google service. So you kind of need something like an AI or an automatic thing to make that better and optimize on the go. For Apple right now, there's only really four ad placements in the App Store, right? Like you've got the Today tab, you've got the Search tab, you've got doing a search result, and you've got at the bottom of other people's apps in the you might also like section. So really, there's not too much that a human couldn't manage, right? Like, there's just not enough slots. So there's some speculation that if they are making an AI-powered platform for advertising, that it's getting them ready, future-proofing them for when they do have more places to advertise. And outside of the App Store, they obviously have some advertising presence in, like, the news app, for instance, and the stocks app. Much of that today is handled by other companies, like NBC Universal has a deal to supply advertising for news and stocks. But you can see Apple being more interested in that over time. And they also have ads in live sports, right, with MLS and MLB for Night Baseball. Again, right now, some of that's handled by the leagues, but increasingly Apple's taking more of a role. You can imagine in time that the AI platform could ultimately show your ads in the MLS interstitials, as well as being in the App Store. And you can imagine that over time, Apple will roll out more slots where search ads appear. Mark Gurman previously said that Apple was going to add advertising to Apple Maps, right? That was in 2022, and so far that hasn't happened. We don't know why. Maybe they're still planning to do it. He also said they were going to think about adding sponsored results in Apple Books and podcasts. So when you search, you'd have like sponsored results, just like the App Store. Not particularly keen on that happening, but I'm not going to say it's not going to happen because it feels like in line with their overall company policy and direction. And there's the looming suggestion that Apple will at some point roll out a ad-supported TV Plus tier. So loads of surfaces where Apple can expand and where maybe an AI platform makes more sense to exist just because there's more places to do it.
When I saw this Business Insider report, I was kind of confused because my interpretation is that this is how online advertising has worked for years, for the most part, where companies set a budget and the ad appears wherever Google and Facebook determine is best fit.
Yeah, so like that does exist, but like there's also just like, you know, you choose the keywords. So like the human types in the keywords, then it appears. But like the AI takes a more active role in like editing the keywords, editing the presentation, changing the title and the copy of the ads.
Okay.
So it's a bit more, it's a bit less passive and a bit more involved.
On the rumors of Apple TV Plus with ads, there was another report this week kind of rounding up recent hires that Apple has made in this department. I think the most notable one is Joseph Cady, a 14-year NBC Universal ad executive who was the executive vice president of advertising and partnerships. A few other people, one from DirecTV, one from Peacock, and one from FanDuel, of all places. The writing is kind of on the wall here, I think. You're the Apple TV Plus expert, though. What do you think?
I think I've shared them so before. Ad-supported TV Plus tier makes 100% sense. They should totally do it.
Mm-hmm.
Every other stream service has one. You can bemoan it, right? It was better, obviously, when you used to pay $9.99 for Netflix and it had no ads at all. that's a thing of the past, right? These services want to make more money. Most of them are unprofitable. They need to increase their prices. They need to bring in more money to make the services profitable so they can carry on surviving. You can't just throw billions into content every single year with no return. So far, Apple is definitely in that bucket. And one way they can expand and hopefully get more viewership on their content, which is generally pretty good, is by making it cheaper. They've obviously had to raise their pricing to, you know, at TV Plus is now $9.99 with no ads. I don't think it's ridiculous to say that they could have a $4.99 plan with ads and they could get way more people to watch it. Even if they had a completely free option, which maybe didn't have the whole catalog, it just had some stuff and it was ad supported. I don't think it belittles or degrades the brand or the quality of the overall service. I don't think anybody looks at HBO content as worse just because they have a HBO Max ad tier now. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just feel it's completely independent. And in the old days, you'd have cable networks and you'd have like the free-to-air networks, which had commercials, right? And so in those days, it was a bit of a different calculus from the branding side of customers of being like, well, you know, you pay to get ad-free. That's just not the case anymore, right? With streaming, it just isn't. The reality today is every streaming service has an ad tier and then you pay more to have no ads. Apple TV Plus is the only exception to that. And I don't think it really makes sense for them to be like that. They should have an ad tier. They should make it as accessible as possible.
So you're of the opinion that an Apple TV Plus tier with ads would come in cheaper. They wouldn't do what like Amazon Prime just did, where they added ads to everybody and said, if you don't want any ads, pay us $3 more a month.
I mean, my argument with Amazon would be the price of Amazon Prime Video would increase over time anyway. So
yeah,
there's a bit of a timing argument there where it's optically better to do it where it starts cheaper and then slowly increases in price. But effectively, it's the same difference, right? Like let's say Amazon today had introduced the ad tier as the cheaper option. Give it 2 years. It would then be, you know, just back to where we are now, where it's $3 more. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it really makes much difference. It's just the way you roll it out. For TV Plus specifically, I think they're pushing it already with the $9.99 price. So
yeah.
I don't think they really have the gap in the consumer goodwill right now to push it even higher. I think it would be beneficial if they could get back to the $4.99 price, ad supported. And by the way, an ad-supported platform only makes sense when you have lots and lots of content to watch, which is another reason why they might be experimenting with the catalog stuff.
I think there's a lot of people who are very worried that the advertising will mess up the prestige of Apple TV Plus. And I think when Apple announced Apple TV Plus, I think they might have or probably thought that they would never do an advertising tier.
I mean, the number one thing they said was it was ad-free. Like,
right.
You go back to the 2019 keynote and they had that big list of checkboxes about what TV Plus is, and like the top result is no ads. But like, that's 5 years ago, the market's changed.
Everybody has no ads in 2019.
Yeah, exactly.
And now everybody has ads, so.
Yeah.
And because these companies make more money from somebody who is on the ad tier and watches ads than they do from somebody who pays for no ads. That's why the price discrepancy between Netflix with ads and the first cheapest ad-free Netflix tier is like $10 a month now.
Yeah, because they got rid of the tier in between that was making them less money. Yeah.
They really don't want people to pay for no ads.
Yeah, the $6.99 ad tier makes them about $15 a month per user. So wow. That's why you can't get the $15 a month tier anymore. And in time, that $6.99 ad tier will be $9.99, right? Like, yeah. It's just what will happen. So yeah, I don't think there's, and I don't take the prestige argument as it like damaging the brand at all. People think of it as separate. It's just a different way to watch, right? You can watch it without ads, you can watch it with ads. If they force you to watch it with ads, then there's a brand hit. But everybody's used to there being multiple tiers and multiple options.
All right, I think that does it for this week. You can go to 9to5mac.com/join, where you'll find Happy Hour Plus for $5 a month or $50 a year. Ad-free versions of every episode, pre, post-show content, bonus episodes, all of the good stuff. 9to5Mac Pro will get you Happy Hour Plus and 9to5Mac Daily Plus with all of those extra bonuses. Send us feedback, happyhour@9to5mac.com. Find me on Threads, Twitter, Mastodon, @ChanceHMiller. And Mayo, what about you?
BZA Mayo.
All right, thanks, Mayo.